Go. So we're rolling. Hello, thanks a lot. Hello, Nick, Little Hales from the UK.
Hi, Christoph.
We have another sleep chat today. This is number 10, and it's a double digit now. So it's great to celebrate my 10th sleep chat with probably the most renowned and known sleep coach in Europe. Thanks for being with me and being with us. Nick Littlehales from the UK. Nick, just a quick bio on you. Nick started his career actually as a rep in international sales and for a mattress industry, in the mattress industry. So that's where his background is actually from. And then he started to move more into the field of sleep with actually creating the first UK Sleep Council in already 1995. So that's a while ago, and I was still, I don't know what I was doing in 95, but whatever. And then immediately in 96, started working already also with the Manchester Football Club. So he, tell us a bit about it later, but he started to get in touch with Alex Ferguson, started to work with the physios and the doctors on their sleep approach, which was quite innovative at that time, I believe. So, and since then he's worked with many football clubs, other teams, other disciplines, athletes, top athletes around the world on their recovery. And then in 2016, he launched his book, his first book, which I've read. It's been translated in, I think Marcus told me yesterday, in 14 different languages. So you are
15 now.
15. Wow. So you are pretty much around the world, which I guess is a great help. And then he, at the same time, and over the years, he developed his own technique on coaching recovery, the R90 technique, which we will talk about a bit later. So I'm really, really happy to have you here, Nick. I start with my questions. As always, I've brought along a few questions. So let's start with the first and the most obvious one, and to get it out of the way. Many people ask me about whether I've heard about Ronaldo sleeping 90 minutes throughout his 24-hour cycle, day and night. We will not talk about also about you coaching stars all the time and stuff. We talk about sleep, but in general, because it's the first question I was being asked, whether I know about that, whether I've heard about it. And I said, yes, I have, but I would like to give people the information up front that you are the one who taught Ronaldo how to sleep, as they call it. So how was your how did you start with that professional football work, and how was it working with these guys, and how what did you do with Ronaldo? So people actually stop asking me this question, I can refer to YouTube. So.
Well, I spend most of my time trying to draw a line under that question because it was a very simple process. As you pointed out, I fell into the world of sport back in the late 90s. It just happened to be Manchester United Football Club, which was local to where my UK office was in Northwest Manchester. So it could have been any club. It just happened to be they were a football club in sport, and that's where it started. Ronaldo pretty much started his career at Manchester United. He has a long affinity with the club. I was actually doing some work with the Chelsea Football Club, and the manager and some of the staff left Chelsea Football Club and ended up at Real Madrid. And they asked me to go along to coach all the medical staff and the coaches and do a training facility assessment, which I went across and did in 2013. The first team squad were there training. That Ronaldo was one of the players. So they were all in around the whole place, but I didn't actually speak to them or coach them directly. I did it through the staff because there was a lot of translational issues. So no doubt, over the period of time, Ronaldo was one of the most elite athletes on our planet. When you ever meet any coach, they'll back that up.
Definitely.
So he gets very interested about a lot of things. And it's very obvious from how he communicates on social media in all sorts of ways that he's adopted and using a lot of the techniques that I will have been talking about over those years and into those staff. But I have never personally coached him. I have never gone to his bedroom and tucked him in. I have never given him any private consultation. Yeah. It's just that they don't mention Piqué or Ramos or Suarez or, you know.
Yeah.
It's only Ronaldo.
Yeah, right. So okay.
I coach a lot of clubs, a lot of teams, and there's celebrity stars in there for sure. But it's only Ronaldo. So
crazy.
If you want to get some headlines,
okay,
thinking that Cristiano Ronaldo has got a personal sleep coach called Nick is quite a fascinating subject. But right, it's actually, the bit about me being his personal coach is not true, but it's quite clear, you know, that he adopts a lot of the principles that I have been coaching, and he talks about it and promotes it extremely well. So I think there's no doubt about it that he's been influenced by it, but there you go.
When I talk to football clubs and the players, I always use him also as a role model in terms of professional sleep treatment, because he's so into it and he talks about it. And that's, you know, that's something that helps us. The media,
absolutely.
The media makes a story out of you with Ronaldo. So as I understand, the background is rather boring, but the sleep part of it and then what you actually teach him or teach the staff and then him is actually the one which is really interesting. So great to have that bridge to my first questions, as you being a sleep coach already for 20 years. So I've been doing it for like 6-7 years. So it'd be great to ask you a few questions also with your work with top athletes. So my first question is, 20 years with sleep, what fascinates you still working with the topic of sleep? I mean, many people ask me, well, you're a sleep coach? What's that? So, and I love it. What do you love about it? What is it?
I don't know whether I love it, Christoph. I think,
okay, well,
you know, I wanted to be a professional athlete in my teens, you know, a footballer, anything at all. I did a little bit of golf for a period of time, but I fell into this sleeping industry, as you pointed out. And along that route, I became an international director traveling around the world. The company I worked for, I graduated through their ranks pretty quickly to international sales and marketing director. We then became a very big group in Europe called the Slumberland Sleeping Comfort Group. And I did collaborate to help set up the very first sleep council, which sort of showed you that there was no organizational body actually looking at this health pillar. I think working alongside academics, professors, doing research, I'm not academic or clinical background myself, but I've certainly been researching it and studying it and listening to how everybody talks about it. And I think the journey was that whilst the clinical side of sleep always sort of showed us how important it was, even the clinicians and the professors didn't have an approach to sleep. Yeah. It's just at the end of every day, you sleep. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
So I always find it fascinating. It's this importance. And they sort of, so many complex things about human recovery in this subject of sleep that you just think, wow, nutrition, exercise, we, you know, eat well, exercise well, sleep well. You know, if you're not hydrating and you're not eating and you're not doing some form of exercise, but if you're not sleeping, you don't last that long.
Sure. Yeah.
So it's kind of, wow. So I suppose what I was just fascinated is probably what not so much I love it. Okay. I was just fascinated by the lack of education, the constant myths and misunderstandings that I was hearing all the time. You know, a clinical advisor would say this and somebody else would say that.
Okay.
So starting to research stuff, and you started to think that, hang on a minute, you know, there's certain things which don't sort of fit into place.
All right.
So I think I just thought I had my little midlife crisis and thought I've done a lot of things and had absolutely no effect. So I think I should go and do something else. But I suppose I just fell into the world of sport by accident. And I think everything that I'd learned, everything that I experienced, you know, I loved sport as a kid. So it was kind of like, oh, if I could make those things work together, that would be a little bit more fun because they're sleepers. But back in the late 90s, it was a different world to where we are now by Mark. Sure. You know, it's just a paradigm shift in everything.
Sure, of course.
So I think along the route, it's always been step by step, certain projects come along with key organizations or coaches or athletes. So all along, I've just been sort of dragged along, sort of keep on doing this, Nick. When every time I sort of think I should give up, you know, there's no money to be made. Everybody thinks I'm crazy.
Yeah.
But I think along the route, there's always been something that cropped up, and that's what kept fascinating me. And every time we did a project, something else was revealed. Mm. So the sort of technique that I umbrellaed sort of came out of working with British Cycling and Team Sky. And, you know, they start winning Tour de France's for fun, you know, four or five of them. Whereas before, you couldn't even get near it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So it was always little sort of steps. And I suppose, you know, the circumstances of this generation, finally, you know, the passion to try and change the concept of it, redefine our mindset about it. I think the key thing that's always interested me is if you've got no education in schooling, then parents don't pass anything on. Because they haven't been educated.
That's right.
So that just keeps rolling. So you hear taken for granted. It's not a performance criteria. So basically, nobody knows how to do it. Nobody knows there might be different ways of doing it. And nobody knows how to apply knowledge to how they could do it. Because we're not all the same. So basically, it's a great opportunity to train the population.
Yeah.
To coach the population on a subject that... it's just so fundamental. Yeah. And I think it's that, I think that's the problem we have, don't we, Christoph? When somebody goes, you know, you sleep, what do you do?
Yeah.
Because when you're asleep, you're not doing anything and you're not in control of it. Your brain is. So it's sort of like, this is an uncontrollable process.
Unproductive.
Unproductive. So how on earth do you, as a coach, impact on that?
Yeah.
And I say, well, we don't even talk about sleep. All we've got is a combination of mental and physical recovery periods. And it's everything we do while we're awake that will reveal sleeping quality going into that physical state.
Yeah.
So we don't even, you know, I'm not even interested in what's happened while you're asleep. How much deep sleep did you get? How many hours you slept? I'm not interested in light sleep and this and everything else, because that's all out of our control. That's your brain is just reacting to your 24-hour rolling process.
Yeah.
So I think the reason why I love it now is because I don't know what we're going to reveal.
Yeah, right.
Because my athletes, well, not my athletes, but I mean athletes do not want to be spending 30-odd% of their day, you know, 8, 9 hours, 10 hours sleeping and doing nothing. Right. They want me to find a way to sleep, get your whole recovery in like 20 minutes back to back. And let's open up our life cycle, you know, twofold.
Okay, cool. So this call is a bit of fascination with, or it's fascination with a bit of love over the years. So, well, I wouldn't call it love, but as you said, it does have really a fascinating sides of it. You're talking about scientists and them and not educating the people. Now we are coaches, so I always see myself between the science and the people who have no knowledge. So I transform science, not science, but the knowledge of it to people. But then again, I always have the difficulty of when I meet scientists, they always look at me and say, well, you're a coach. So you know, what's your qualification and what makes you somebody telling people what to do? How do you react when you got people telling you you're just a coach and not a scientist? So why should I listen to you? What is your thinking?
I have met many people, and the ones that have the most profound influence on me were not qualified to give me that advice. Right?
Okay.
They may have learned it through experience. like a father or a mother or a brother or a sister. They have, may have learned it because they've been in that as an occupation. So they're not qualified to be a director of a company. They've just put a lot of hours and experience and been successful, so they get given the title. But they didn't study it at school or university or got a degree. And I think when you wander around, there's so many people who have sort of influence, and they've been probably the most profound on my life. So I think when you talk about a coach, it's actually quite a skill set that not everybody can just adopt. I was coaching when I was a professional golfer. I was coaching other golfers to improve their game, right? The only reason I was qualified to do that is because I knew how to play the game and how to practice the game and how to get it in the hole with less shots than anybody else. That was it. You didn't have a qualification. It was simply your natural experience and abilities. And I think that's what coaching is principally. You know, you can't just make somebody a coach. There's all sorts of aspects. So when you look at the whole bundle of experience from actually being in professional sports, being around for over 30 odd years, being involved with massive changes, technology, this, being a parent, having grandkids, being an international company director, managing massive groups of people, creating strategies, looking at trends in the future. You know, you put all of these things together, and it's also about your ability to engage with another individual or group.
Yeah, that's it.
And that's not easy. Yeah. So you do see many people who are highly qualified in the area, in any particular area, but they simply just can't communicate or engage or accept the fact that there might be not a different way of doing it. But I think that the thing that I love, it's about training, it's about coaching, it's about making people coachable, because a lot of us are sort of put barriers up to being, you know, counseled or coached. But I think the fascinating thing is that I haven't met an academic clinician who could give me a defined answer of how to achieve a night's sleep of a quality that's deemed to be average, high, or low for a human being.
Okay.
I've never come across it. You know, I've read books beyond belief. Sure. I've talked to neuroscientists, all sorts of people. But they go about sleep in exactly the same way as any of us do. But their subject matter just happens to be sleep. So I think the reason, there's two sides to it. One is I'm concentrating on trying to help that particular individual to get to A to B, to maximize their recovery the best they can, to protect them, to mean that they can deal with the challenges of what they're doing. And we don't focus on sleep. We're focusing on everything else around it. And the biggest thing is, you know, worrying about sleep is the biggest disruptor. Because we're not knowledged. We got myths and misunderstandings. We don't know why sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes we sleep for 8 hours, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we wake up two or three times. Sometimes we can't get to sleep. Sometimes we felt like, oh, I slept for 8 hours last night, but I feel absolutely knackered. How did that happen? So you kind of think, well, if there's so many variables and there's no defined approach, then if I've got one and it doesn't hurt you, I'm not prescribing medical equipment or medicines or drugs, or I'm not operating on you. I'm simply just passing on my advice to you and helping you, you know, develop your own particular approach to this very natural recovery process. And fill in the gaps. If I'm doing that and nobody else is, surely everybody's benefiting. And then if we've got more people doing that, absolutely. But I don't think, maybe it's changing. You know, I see one or two experts in the field who are slightly modifying their approach to sort of realize that, you know, you've got to talk in a slightly different way. And maybe that will change. But the other side to it, Christoph, is I have got a long list of highly academical, clinical, professional, educated coaches, sports science professionals, nutritionists, managers, doctors, medical staff, physios, chiropractors, osteopaths, players, athletes around the globe who follow the work that I do and pay me to help them. So if you don't like what I do, then you are criticizing a big chunk of some very highly qualified professional people who can choose whoever they want to get involved.
And
I think there's room for everybody. Of course there is. I think the line always is that if you want to just, because we can in this world, if you want to just set yourself up and say that you do this and say that you do that, if you haven't got something like authenticity, a track record, you've got proven approaches. If what you do can't be sort of gauged or measured, then you will be found out very, very quickly nobody will employ you. Nobody will employ you.
Okay. Cool. So there's a technique side of it. There's an emotional side of it. There's a skill side of it. And there's a factual side of it that you kind of play back to these people, just being like a scientist trying to use just facts to persuade people instead of coaching them into their own individual way of sleeping. So I heard you say, to step in, because you already talking about that a bit, is that I heard you once in one of your videos say that forget the word sleep and think in mental and physical recovery periods. What do you mean by that? What's your, I think that's just like a bit of the start into your own method and approach of you know, working with sleep. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the problem was when I first sort of fell into sports, it was with a group of very young athletes, right? And not educated in this area the slightest, never mind all the doctors and managers around them. So I think what I tried to do was to try to redefine the language so that they had a more sort of tangible engagement with it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we all know is that when you go to sleep, it's normally in a bedroom. It's normally on a bed with a mattress and a pillow. That's where we think we sleep, right? And most of the time it's all about, you know, aches and pains and looking after your back and something nice and firm and orthopedic. So there's the physical aspect of when you're asleep is physical recovery, because you're not active. So you're still, but if you're not, so you're trying to rehabilitate your physical form.
Mm.
When you go into sleep, you're not thinking, you're not doing anything. So we pretty much realize that it's a period of time where sleep is actually rejuvenating, repairing, replenishing, shutting things down, allowing things to have a period of respite, to rebuild, reset. So rather than this sort of thing, oh, I get up in the morning, and then when there's only so many hours left, I sort of like, oh, I'm going to go to sleep now. You sort of think of that period of, because you're doing nothing, because you're not in control of it, but it is a mental and physical recovery period.
Yeah.
So what you do is then when they wake up in the morning, and as you go through the day, what they are thinking about is mental and physical recovery periods. Now that makes it a little bit more of an active descriptive, because sleep means doing nothing for a long period of time. Whereas this is a mental and physical recovery period. So that's why I'm doing it, so I can go faster, make better decisions. So then you change the concept of it.
All right.
And I think, you know, sometimes there are words that are very difficult to change somebody's perception.
Yeah.
And I think sleep is one of them.
Mm.
It's taken for granted. It's not a performance criteria, and it either works or it doesn't, and we don't know how to do it, and we don't care about it, and we still crack on with our day. Using that term is just a negative one.
Yeah.
So let's sort of put it in context that sleep means mental and physical recovery.
Okay. So great. So this is like 20 years of experience and you being a coach and not a scientist to know what people what motivates people more than and maybe the word of sleep. Great. That's perfect. So now stepping forward a bit more into how you work, what you do is that you have an approach of saying that before the electric light was there, we slept in polyphasic cycles versus monocycles today. So today we say we have to put everything into 8 hours, and it used to be different before the electric light came in. So is the sleep rhythm we have today actually a result of industrialization? So is it kind of just because now we think we can do so much more in a day that we need to put also performance-wise everything into 8 hours, and then we have the best recovery? Instead of saying, hey, well, I mean, the way we used to sleep was different, so why don't we try and, you know, do this naturally, and instead of saying, okay, there's industrialization, now we need to stick to it, you know? So
I think it was just, you know, it's actually going to a library or reading a book back in those days to do research. Now you just do it with your fingers. But that was exactly that. When you looked at the schedule of an elite athlete, and you just go, how does this 8 hours work? You know, because when you look at their schedule, you just can't see how it fits. So it doesn't. When you look at a nurse's schedule, a night shift worker, a pilot, a surgeon, there was so many different. You look at humans sleeping all around the planet. You know, we're not all in a sort of nice, lovely bedroom with a bed and a mattress and aircon and stuff like that. If we live in the Northern Hemisphere, we've got Eskimos in bits of ice, in freezing temperatures, and we've got other people in very hot countries and all sorts of stuff. So you kind of think, hang on a minute. So it was always fascinating to me that if it was more natural up until, as humans, we invented this electric light and it came very much into the world. Prior to that, it was all amber light, red light, fire light.
Yeah.
You know, we had a much better relationship with the circadian rhythms, the sun going around our planet. So we were more attuned to that process. The sun hasn't changed. The sun is completely, does not have any interest in pandemic viruses or human behavior. It just goes around the planet, right? As human beings, our brains and all our bodily functions, we are completely synchronized to that process, as we know. So it's kind of like, hang on a minute. If we're going to continue to increase our schedules, keep creating this 24/7 global environment, which has really been, you know, we couldn't really imagine what it was going to be like in the late 90s to where we are now. But you sort of go, well, wouldn't that be a better approach? Because actually trying to think like to get your 8 hours in one block, to get all your sleep in one block, you don't do that anyway. So whilst your mindset is that that's what you have to do, it doesn't actually happen. So maybe if we use maybe twice a day, three times a day, for some sports, a multiphasic approach for a period of time, I can't see any research that says that that's bad for us.
All right, okay.
I can see research that says it might not be good. I can see the benefits for long blocks. But I can also see the benefits that it's about 30-odd% of every 24 hours that as a human being, we should be in some sort of recovery. That equates to 8 hours out of 24. So is it more about 8 hours in 24 hours, or is it about just 8 hours in one block? So I think when you kind of hear research that if you don't get 8 hours in one block, solid block, and you only get six, then basically that's fatal. You know, things are going to break down and you won't make it. But you sort of think, well, just how many of us don't actually even achieve 8 hours a day in one block without disturbances, without awakenings, with the right levels of quality all through the stages, 7 days a week, 365 through the seasons? How does a human being have the ability to be a long haul pilot? How is ability to work night shifts? How's their ability to work long periods of time inside hospitals and things like that? And I think what's being examines right now while we're speaking on this is the world, which is really fascinating, and we pay all due respect to the real negative side to this, of course, but the fascinating thing is that everything I've been working around and talking about and all sorts of stuff and redefining sleep and mental and physical recovery periods and circadian rhythms and chronotypes and sleeping in short cycle, just look at what a massive section of our population are being faced with. And you think, wow, if all those frontline workers were thinking about 8 hours a night, we would come to a grinding halt tomorrow. So it's like, that's what it is about. You know, this is what I'm faced with. How do I achieve it? How do I get around it? I say, right, you know, some of the little things that make us tick, and it's about this worry thing, Christoph, for me, is that if I've got a nice balance of social experiences, if I've got a nice balance of interacting with other humans, if I've got a nice balance between work, rest, and play, if I've got a nice, healthy, balanced diet, if I've got a nice approach to keeping myself fit and healthy, if I'm not always looking at the same thing all the time, if I've got a nice, balanced, varied lifestyle, then just like going out into the mountains or into the woods or into the lakes and going camping for a week with a tent, no special mattresses, no protection, nothing to think about other than taking advantage of the morning, the afternoon, the evening, and do it again. Visualization, sounds, light and dark, diminished light, all this sort of stuff, and we feel amazing. And the things that we sometimes get so focused on is individual remedies, solutions in isolation to overcome our ability not to sleep. When actually, it's very, very easy to reveal it as long as you know what will reveal it. You're done.
So it is, in a way, that's why I realize many times it's part of a lot of quality emotional work with people, trying to put them in a state of approaching sleep, of accepting it, of what happens and how to treat and how to, you know, have the quality before and after the sleep. If you put it, so that's one side of it. And the other side of it, do you agree saying that if you look at the circadian rhythm and you look at your chronotype and you look at the sleep cycles, the 90 minutes we have, as a technical base, does that already, if you do that right for yourself, if you look at all this, 24 hours, you look at your chronotype, you look at how you put the cycles in place, would you say that is already technically like 80% of what you could do to really put yourself into the right position to have a good sleep?
It's along the little journey, Christoph, it was, so these are the challenges that group faced. So, you know, you'd start off maybe, you know, chronotype might become something that might impact on that group. So you might look at that. Then you might look at not so much circadian rhythms, because that's a deep one. But then we'd look at this polyphasic sleeping approach. So it's like, how do we get somebody through all of this and trying to protect them? So, you know, all the work I'd ever done, I used to listen to the professors and actually be in sleep clinics with friends, clinical experts. And they go, what we do is we wire you up and measure you for 60 minutes. But some of us like to look at it in 90 minutes, because that's where all the stages reveal themselves, light, sleep, da, da, da. And then we'll look at the next 90 minutes. And I go, okay, so that's how you look at it. Yeah, in 90-minute blocks. So you can benchmark the data. Yeah, some look at 60, but we like 90. Okay. So, you know, take the smile off your face, Christoph. But when I first started working with a Premiership football team, the length of a game was 90 minutes with a break in the middle.
Yeah.
So it says you can't go for a full 90 minutes. You have to stop. You have to hydrate, maybe a little bit of fuel up. You have to a little bit of mental downtime, refocus, re-mindset, and then go again, right? Mm-hmm. So if you try to sort of say, okay, and then you sort of think, well, the circadian rhythms, the sun going around our planet, is all about rhythm, pattern, and harmony, and consistency. You know, we put a clock on it. So
yeah, right.
Maybe a consistent wake time, the brain likes that because of that. Maybe a wake time that's more aligned with your chronotype, or at least being aware of it. Maybe if we look at sleep as not 8 hours, but 5 90-minute cycles, which is 7.5 hours. Okay, so I sleep in cycles in a polyphasic manner, you know. So I'm a poly 90 man, you know. Suddenly, the language starts to change, and you want 5 cycles. Then you start thinking about, it's not about napping. So I think what it does, whatever period, you can't start making the period up, you know, because it is factual. It's either 60 or 90 minutes, as far as I'm aware today. Yeah. So the 90 minutes worked for me because it was the length of a football game. Mm. But it also defined the 8 hours a little bit better. Okay. Then we could say, right, we get 4 cycles at night in a nocturnal block. And then we can grab another cycle, either a 90-minute cycle midday, because we had training in the morning, now we've gone home. Or we use 30-minute cycles, because 30 minutes is classified as the nap period, under 30, 26 minutes. So 30 is 30% of 90. You know, 5 90s is like 30% of 24. We've got 16 timings. We've got some rhythm. We've got some pattern. We know that if we have to change things, we either get up at that time, or the cycle before it, or the cycle after. If things are going to change, we either sleep between there and, you know, that point and the consistent wake time, or only 4 cycles, or just 3 cycles.
Mm.
So what tended to happen is, rather than just a random approach, we would also say we try to keep the consistent wake time in place, irrespective of how much recovery we've got that day, because we're not in control of every day. But what we're able to do is to balance that with maybe a midday cycle or an early evening cycle, and try to think about how many cycles we get every 7 days. So it's almost like 5 cycles a day. So it's kind of like we're looking to get more recovery, but actually it's perceived that you're sleeping less. But it's kind of like, if I'm just enjoy my evenings because I just put a 30-minute cycle in late afternoon as my part, so I can really enjoy my evenings and take the pressure off. I'm not even thinking about going to bed until 12:30 at night, because I sleep between 12:30 and 6:30, which is 4 cycles and 6 hours. It's a hell of a long time. But if I just go to sleep naturally and sleep all the way through that and wake up in the morning and I've been as refreshed as I possibly can be, and then I crack on with my day again, lots of distracted, then, you know, surely that's a better approach than waking up in the morning and then just trying to get everything crammed in until there's only so many hours left, and then you either try to force yourself or crash. So it's kind of, I don't want you to feel as though you're so tired that, you know, your head hits the pillow and out you go.
What
you actually should be is, it's all about rhythms, patterns, and harmonies. Mm. Your brain will put you to sleep at the right times of day if you just let it. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll put you to sleep behind the wheel of a car on an autobahn at 120 kilometers an hour.
If they want to.
Why did you do that? Yeah. Because right time, right place, right visualization, bang, brain says go. So it's kind of, don't try and sleep. Try and have a nice relationship with your brain, natural things, rhythm and pattern and harmony. So it's not some scientific approach, Christoph.
Yeah.
You could say you could do it with 60 minutes, I suppose. But
I agree.
I think what happens when you think 60 minutes, you start thinking hours. And as soon as you start thinking hours, you start thinking about 8 hours and 6 hours. And I want you to stop thinking in that way and think cycles.
That's
so
great.
90 minutes doesn't have a relationship with hours.
Mm.
You don't say 1.5 hours. You just say 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and I think 90 minutes is a nice period of time because it's a little bit longer.
Sure.
And it breaks the day up into 16 phases. And then suddenly, I think, you know, anybody, you know, not everybody that I'm coaching and work with, you know, goes to university and got degrees. and studies and does lots of research. They need it in a very simple and straightforward, non-intrusive, subconscious manner. And if they just go, I'm on a 5-cycle a day, I use little CRPs, little controlled recovery periods, 30 minutes, 20 minutes. I have a nice balanced approach. Sometimes I'll do 6 at night, sometimes 4 or 3. This is how I do it. And it's all cool. And I don't worry about it anymore.
Yeah, I think it makes a
nothing
lot
more than that. It's just
But it's a mindset.
I'll talk to people about rhythms and patterns and harmony, and then not give them something that gives them an opportunity. So I wake at 6:30. What do you do in the first 90 minutes? Second 90 minutes? Third 90 minutes? What time do you go to sleep? 12:30 into 6:30.
Yeah.
4 cycles. What happens if you want to go to sleep earlier? Well, it's 11 into 6:30. That's 5 cycles. What's your 3? 2 a.m. into 6:30 if I've got back from the game late. So immediately, I've now got some timings that I don't even have to think about.
Yeah.
Because it just happens, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I completely agree.
That rhythm, mindset rhythm.
I completely agree.
Does it work? Ask Cristiano.
I ask him next time I call him. The thing is, what I really like about it is in terms of it kind of makes sense to what I understand, kind of from what I know from the facts to applying it to people. And what I really like about it is that to many people I talk to and they say, I need these 8 hours. And I tell them, first ask them why. And then I say, how we're built and how we were grown up as humans, we don't need to sleep 8 hours in a row. We used to be somebody waking up, looking at the fire, looking at the kids. And then, as you said, there are different phases in a day. And then suddenly they completely relax about it and say, wow, it's good to know. And it takes all the pressure out of my 8 hours. And then they start to kind of look at it differently just by saying, just forget these 8 hours in a row. Not that I'm applying as consequently as usual your technique, but just by pushing it and saying you don't need to really force yourself into a certain period of 8 hours, then they relax and they say, well, that seems
absolutely
more natural to me than what people tell me, you know.
The most important thing is it's not that, you know, it's my technique. I've developed and created this thing out of somewhere. It's nothing. Anybody who's in the world of sleep can't argue that these are some of the things. And if you want if you were educated in school, you know about these things. How the circadian rhythms, humans have chronotypes, genetic twists, our relationship with light and dark, the power of blue light in the daylight, because it's not bad for you, and all this sort of stuff. Then basically everybody would be, you know, as soon as they go through their formative growth years and their parents, everybody will be sleeping in cycles per se. So it would just be, it should just be what everybody does. So I suppose, you know, you could look at it in so many different ways, but that's it. You know, you can't sort of make it up and say, we'll do 45 minute cycles or we'll do 15 minutes. No. The data and the research and the background shows us that you could look at it like that or like that, but you can't make up numbers. So either 60 or 90, there ain't no other numbers, right? Yeah. At this moment in time.
Yeah, sure.
So that's what we should all be talking about. The key thing is what do you do with them?
Yeah.
So, just thinking, well, I've adopted this R90 technique and I sleep in 90-minute cycles. Yeah. Well, you can't just say it. Yeah. It's actually be able to, how do you manage it and how do you do it? What do you do around it? So it's just a basis to start with. And I think, you know, it's with the generation that we have today. And as soon as we talk about something, we then turn it into a shortened version. So if it's laugh out loud, it's LOL. If it's lots of love, it's LOL. Then there's an emoji. If we've got coronavirus, it's called COVID-19. Now we've got C-19. You know, all the time, we're just chopping it down into text speak. So if you sort of go, you know, I'm on a 590 cycle routine with 430 CRPs. That's my mental and physical recovery plan.
Yeah.
Huh? What did you just say? Oh, I get 7.5 hours sleep a day. And I try and do that every day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
I sleep, you know, changes.
Sure. That's what I like about it. Is it has the background. It has, well, there's a science background. It has your experience in it. And it takes the people and the reality into account. So I like your approach. You're saying not everybody has to work with it and everybody has to apply it, but at least there's somebody like you out there, you know, trying to find a different approach and make it understandable and easy to use and puts it into a frame that kind of makes sense, at least to me. So thanks for that already, for doing that to the sleep business. But we got about 10 minutes left before you said you have something else to do afterwards, which I want to respect. But another questions apart from these big sports Ronaldo question is that people, and I'd like your opinion about it, is all the new technology tracking business out there. So there are many products coming out, there are robots even out there. There are all these tracking devices we're using. I heard the other day that Apple is reinventing or relaunching a new tracking system with a new mattress type thing or whatever. What do you think about this approach? I have my opinion. I'd like your opinion on it, about all these products. Why are they exploding? Do they work? Do you promote them in your way? I mean, you're a neutral person. You don't have to. But what do you say about all this stuff?
I think there's the great danger that, you know, I'm in my 60th year this year, and there's a great danger that you lose touch with how things are developing and what's important to people. Mm. There's always a danger of being accused of that. But I work with people in that generation. Yeah. They are young professional athletes, coaches, striving to be at their best. So this is my everyday conversation. I think the thing is that over the years, we've seen products and technology impact in the world of sleep. And I think if you've got a population that has no educational platform around this, we certainly have around nutrition and exercise, the other health pillars.
Yeah.
And we've got a lot of experience, a lot of data has been collected by a lot of professionals. So it's very easy for any one of us to find out some of the key data points or key facts about eating, nutrition, carbs, proteins, hydration, water, exercise, you know, 30 minutes walking as a minimum, this, that, and everything else. And so we've got a lot of things that we can trust that make sense. Heart rate variability, you know, all that sort of stuff. That even anybody can pick it up. Grab a tracker, say that, oh, if it goes above that, you need to come down. Oh, I'll do that, But when it comes to, when I go to sleep, I have no control over it. So what my brain is doing, whatever that reveals in the morning, I've still got to go on to do what I need to do. Mm-hmm. Is it ever going to say stop training? Is it ever going to say you can't go to work? You can't fly a plane? You can't drive a bus? You can't take the kids to school? No, it'll never do that. So what is the use of the data? Now, is it to give you some indication about the kind of quality that you're getting? Well, do you know how to influence that data? Mm. How long have you been doing it for? Because you basically got to do this 7 days a week through the seasons, 365, when you're working, when you're on holiday, when you're in hotels, when you're up the side of mountains, when you're at work, midday, early morning, afternoon. You've got to create a lot of data that actually tells you that if you smile for 20 minutes every day, you will increase your deep sleep, your REM and non-REM sleep, by up to 3%. Wow. That sounds amazing.
I'll try that.
Right? So all you got to do is smile for 20 minutes every day, and you'll get more deep sleep.
Okay,
you know,
do that. Yeah.
It's sort of like, okay. The other thing is, I think data collection, a lot of the people I work around, you know, they're massive advocates for just capturing every piece of data they possibly can. But I think what's being examined, and particularly with this COVID-19 period we're in now is that we get too intrusive. So you dumb down talent and flair, you dumb down creativity and all sorts of stuff, because what happens is that you are constantly being driven by data. And a lot of the professional coaches are now trying to look at just key data points, not so intrusive. And the other factor is, the amount of people who actually spend most of their time sleeping in their own rooms, in their own beds, in the same environment, with the same thing going on every day, then, you know, maybe tracking it's okay. But they've already got a medical term for insomniacal behavior developed by reacting to data. It's called orthosomnia already. Yeah. And that's because people get even more anxious that they wake up in the morning and the data says they actually had a good night's sleep, but they feel absolutely crap.
Sure.
Sometimes they wake up and feel really energized, but the data says not, because it's still guessing.
Yeah.
I think, Christoph, you and I both know that to actually generate that kind of data, you've got to be taking it off the frontal lobe of your brain. So if it's about movement or pulse or heart rate or stuff like that, or the sensors in your mattress, you know, all that sort of stuff, you go, wow. Let me just tell you, if Usain Bolt is in a hotel or a village at an Olympic event, he hasn't chosen that mattress. He hasn't chosen that environment. He hasn't chosen who's living next door to him or the team opposite. He hasn't chosen that as his sleeping environment, but he has to go out there and run as fast as faster than everybody else.
Yeah.
Right. And how did he do that? So I think once you start tracking, you've really got to take on board that it's not about determining what you're going to do and what you won't do, but it may be that it will give you a little bit of confidence, maybe over a period of time, that maybe you are getting a level of sleep. But I think the biggest factor, and we've done it when we were working with British Cycling Team, Sky, Manchester City Football Club, Liverpool, NBA coaches, you know, New Zealand Olympic rowing teams last week. You know, the thing is you just want to feel as though wherever you're sleeping, you could try and have an approach that reveals the highest quality of mental and physical recovery. Now, that might be very bad, or it could be good.
Sure.
But as long as you know that you're approaching it in that way. So the short answer is to it, at the moment, I think I don't encourage people to use them.
Okay.
Not for other reasons, no, sure, it's fine. Sure. But as far as it's the sleep thing, I think there's such a long journey.
Yeah. Right?
And it's sort of like, because there's no definitive approach, because there's so many variables, that I think it's one of those areas. I know for a fact that if I get on a bike, on a static turbo boosted bike, and I, you know, go like mad, my heart rate is going to go up. And if I just stop into a nice recovery type of approach, then the heart rate comes down. And it's all about that variability. I don't want to. So it's about cardiovascular performance. Now, anybody can work that out. Anybody can find it. And it's a nice way to track it, because it's heart rate, it's pulse. But this sleep thing?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think it's really dangerous. Eye masks, earplugs, supplements, sensors by your bed, trackers, apps.
Yeah.
I think I could be wrong, but you know, if I had a sensor in my mattress at home that was there to help me track my sleep, but then I'm going on holiday and I'm in a hotel, or the athlete's going to a training camp and traveling halfway around the world and all that sort of stuff, basically you've always got to make sure that humans can sleep anywhere, on anything, anytime, any place. You know, it's about adaptability. It's about knowing the key factors about this process. So I can sleep on a sofa, in a chair, on a plane, up the side of a mountain, in a tent, anywhere I can sleep.
Okay. Well, great.
I don't need all these fancy things around me to do that.
Yeah. I'm really happy that I'm along with you and on the same line, because I think exactly 100% the same as you do. From my experience, not because I have some own knowledge or something. It's from what I see working with
people. No, Christoph, very, very quickly, some 10, 15 years ago, a product came out called the Zeo, Z-E-O. And it literally was a little headband on the front of your brain here.
Yeah.
And it would literally track the brainwave patterns, and it's portable. And I was with a professor of sleep, and we saw this product and went, wow, this is amazing. Because people can actually do a clinical test in their own home. Perfect. Amazing. This is going to change the world. Where is that product?
Yeah.
It sort of came into the marketplace, but it disappeared. Because if you've got to stick something on your forehead, it makes you sleep on your back.
Yeah, right. And that's right?
So what I mean is that there's so many little things about the whole process that it can be extremely counterproductive. I very much hope, and I'm sure it'll happen, is that there'll be some little microchip implanted in my side of my earlobe that will track all sorts of things, including brainwave patterns. And I'm sure we'll find ways that if you do that and that and that, you can sleep for 20 minutes. You don't need 8 hours. I'm sure it's all good. You know, whatever you think of these days is likely to happen, however crazy it sounds.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But right now, right now.
Okay. That's good. It's great to hear what you're saying about that. So before we finish, I'd like to just mention that.
Sorry.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
They're after me.
Yeah, you need to keep on. You're a busy sleep coach. That's good to see. Just before I finish, just to say that you are out there. You have a website. You have products you develop yourself from what your knowledge on mattresses and pillows and you have that Anna technique, so you can be. People can get in touch with you, through your website. They can buy products you develop. So, do you want to maybe say one or two things about that? So you have a little.
Advert part of the whole technique of redefining somebody's approach, training them, coaching them. The R90 technique is actually going through seven key recovery areas, which is we've been touching on today. And two of those is environments that we choose or have to sleep in. And the other one is the products that we choose or have to sleep with.
Yeah.
And so as we go through the coaching process, we do get to that bit. So we have a range of products, but we're not like normal retailers. They're just, there are some very simple, straightforward products that you can combine together to create a kit for your home or a kit to travel with. So we've got two pillows. We've got one duvet. We've got a mattress in three body types, called ecto, meso, and endo, which is the medical terms for physical shape.
Yeah.
So it's very, very simple. So we have those. We have a website, sportsleepcoach.com.
Great.
We have all the social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter. We're chucking out free content for fun. We also do a lot of blog posts every week, which is basically just trying to sift through the stuff about sleep.
That's on your website or the
blog.
Yeah, okay.
We've got coaching services. We've got easy access self-coaching services. Read my book or listen to the book or do a little download, a little 10-step course. We've got little workbooks, PDFs. So you can access, you can make your first steps, very low investment, which I think is key. And then we've got other things that sort of develop into quite an elite athlete program that might last over 3 or 4 months into a big event.
Sure.
Or it might be an organization trying to make behavioral change. And that's where we sort of have this like toolkit of webinars. Podcasts have become really useful because you can have a chat with the key gatekeepers in an organization asking all the questions. And then everybody can just watch it in their own time as if they're good. Yeah. So webinars, podcasts, individual coaching and stuff like that. So, I think the big step for everybody is, you've got personal trainers, you've got life coaches, you've got all sorts of people that we're fully aware of.
Yeah, sure.
But sleep coaches seem to be a bit strange. But actually, if you think about it, is if you've not been educated in something, then just maybe you're not doing it as well as you could. So if you just step into our world, just step into our world, however you want to do it, even with low cost investment, you may come out of this that could paradigm shift your everyday approach to the rest of your life. Now, wouldn't you want to know that now?
Yeah.
So I think that's what sleep coach is all about. So
thanks, Nick. Let me just, it's such a perfect line at the end. Thanks for that promotion for all of us, for yourself, for me. I think we're done. I think you need to go. We have 1 hour. Yep. I'm really, really happy you took the time. Thank you very much, Nick.
Well, if you wanted to do, you know, episode 2 and dive bomb into something else, more than happy. But I will have to go now.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot, Nick. Have a good time. We'll stay in touch and talk to you whenever. Have a good day.
No worries.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, bye.